I recently had the privilege, I considered it a privilege, to be invited to present what the organizers entitled a Bitochon Boot Camp. I was never sure, and I'm still not sure what boot camp is, but it was a Shabbos where the entire Shabbos was dedicated to talks about Bitochon. Actually, there were 8 different talks, believe it or not, and hitting it from different angles. And I, after the Shabbos, on the way back on the plane, I wrote up an outline of what I remembered of what the talks were. And looking at it, I think that it's a fairly comprehensive overview of the whole sugya. I shouldn't say the sugya, but the issues, the major issues involved in Bitochon. I'd like to try to present it here in a brief fashion. See if we could get through it in a short period of time, at least the highlights. But I would like to preface this with a quote, that a famous quote from the Goyin, from the Vilna Goyin in Mishle. Vilna Goyin in Mishle writes that Iker Nesinas HaTorah LeYisroel Hu Kedei SheYosimu B'Tchoinu B'Hashem. The Iker of the giving of the Torah to Klal Yisrael was that they should place their Bitochon in Hashem. So putting Bitochon in Hashem, being able to trust in Hashem, is from the Ikrei Hadas. It's such a basic principle that the Goyin says that it's the most essential issue, a reason, if you will, that the Iker of it was, the real basis of everything, the most important part, was to develop Bitochon. And the whole Torah is geared towards that. And this is an attempt to try to expand and explain and broaden the sense of what this Bitochon is all about. A very simple definition. There's two, the Chavis HaLavavos tells us, there are two aspects to Bitochon. I would say one is the essence and the other is the benefit. No, maybe they're both the essence and they're both the benefits. I don't know. One is this trust that Hashem is in control of everything and takes care of everything and is full of chesed. And eventually that trust leads me to be sure enough not to give up hope, and maybe even elevates me to the point where I can feel confidence that Hashem is going to fulfill the wishes of my heart. It's not an easy level to achieve. It's quite sophisticated, but at least the level of I'm not giving up hope. What am I giving up hope? Till the last minute, Hashem can do anything. And Hashem is highly motivated to do everything because He only created the world for the purpose of chesed. So that's a means of achieving things that we want in life. The second thing is, the Chavos HaLavavos describes as menuchas nefesh aboteach, the sense of menuchas nefesh, peace of mind. Nothing to worry about, because it's not up to me. There's nothing I can do anyway. I got to do what I got to do, but that's not where it's at. Hashem controls everything, and He's Molei Chesed and Rachamim, and He created the world only through Chesed, and that's what His essence is, and therefore, I'm not worried. Nothing to worry about. He's in charge. He's in control. He cares about it more than I do. So there's the trust that something will happen, and there's the Menuchas Nefesh Aboteach. There's this menuchas hanefesh that comes. Ad kedei kach, that Rashi says in Parshas Bahar, where the Torah says, Vishavtim ala oretz lovetach. Rashi says, lovetach, sheloi tidagu. You won't worry. Betach, trust, sureness is, there's nothing to worry about. Hashem's in control of everything. I have nothing to worry about. So that's really a general, broad, definition of bitochon. I'd like to take this a little bit out of order, because I think for practical reasons this talk was given later, but I think for understanding reasons, it should be the introduction, it should be the first. And anyone who is interested can make copies of this later on. Before we have any sense of what it means or how we can achieve trust in Hashem, the first thing we have to know is what I guess what people roughly call emuna. If you don't have emuna, you can't have bitochen. That's what the Rishonim say. Kol habiteach ma'amin. Anyone who has bitochen has to believe, because if you don't believe, or I would rather say no, that there is Hashem, and that He created the world, and that He created it only for the purposes of chesed, and He's involved in every aspect of our lives, and there's Hashkocha Protis, and He's capable of doing anything. If I don't have all of this knowledge, then there's nobody to trust, because what about you? You can't trust a person who's not capable of delivering. His desire, his sincerity may be impeccable, but if he's not capable, then there's no point in trusting him. So you have to know, and also on the other hand, it's the same thing in fundraising. They say in fundraising, you have to go to a person who has money and gives money. If you go to a person who wants to give but doesn't have, not going to get anything. If you go to a person who has but doesn't give, you're also not going to get anything. I mean, al piderech hateva. It needs both. Those are the requirements. So too, that we have to know that Hashem is all capable and all giving. And that's the basics. That's included in what we call emuna. But there has to be strong. Because if that's not strong, if that's wavering, if that's, I think, I know, I don't know, I read a couple of books, I heard some stories, then to build on that a bitochen is going to be very difficult. So the first thing we have to know is that we do not subscribe to the Christian concept of leap of faith. Many people think it's a Jewish concept because they took so much from us. This they didn't take from us. They didn't take from us the avoidance of this concept. But this they didn't take from us. No leap of faith. There's two ultimate realities, historical events, witnessed by millions of people, recorded in a document that was taught to their children and future generations, many versions, many copies of that document, all the same version. A document that testifies to eyewitness testimony, not we believe there was such an event. We saw it with our own eyes. We saw it. We heard it. We were there. And we testified to future generations, millions of people. The two major events were, one event was the Nisim of Mitzrayim, which represented the powers of Hashem as the creator, because nobody saw creation. Od Marishon was created at the very end of creation. And Maimon Har Sinai, the Hashem speaking to Klal Yisrael, to give him the Torah, and speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu in front of Klal Yisrael, and appointing him as the official Novi, as the official teacher, as the official spokesman. And these two public events witnessed by an entire nation, by millions of people, and testified by those millions of people to their children through a written document, through oral testimony, and through a written document through which they lived their lives and for which they gave their lives over the generations. And that very document is in that safe over there, sits there today. In fact, something else very interesting sits in that safe, I noticed. Sits a Sefer Torah that's kosher, I hope, and a Sefer Torah that's posel, and has the gartel around the outside. Because if a Sefer Torah has even the slightest psul, namely one letter, has a slit down the middle. So the letter is separated by a hair-thin split that a Bal Koireh, whose very sharp eye, can see. Sefer Torah is posel. It has to be fixed. It's put back in embarrassment with the gartel on the outside until it's fixed. Or maybe sometimes it's not fixable so much. But that's it. It's been preserved over thousands of years. We're 3,330 years from Maimon Har Sinai, preserved in verbatim every single copy of every Sefer Torah given over, rewritten from another Sefer Torah and passed down to this very day. no differences, no Jews that have been separated for who knows how long in various places of the world come back there to Israel with the same Sifrei Torah. It's the most amazing thing in the world. And basically, it's a eyewitness testimony, document of the eyewitness testimony, teaching of the eyewitness testimony from generation to generation, in all parts of the world, the same testimony, the same document, and actions that we live that testify to the truth of the document. This document is not just relegated to literature, because we live by it. If the document says put a mezuzah on the doorpost, agav, to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, we do it. If the document says to put tzitzis on the corners of your beged, also to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, we do it. If the document says to put on tefillin on the arm and on the head to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, we do it. And so forth and so on, and Shabbos and Yontif and all of the Tariyag mitzvahs, all living by this document. So this document is not just a piece of literature which maybe we took seriously and maybe we didn't take seriously. We took it so seriously that it's never been changed, never been allowed to be changed. We live by every word. We study the Torah Shebaal Peh, whose entire Matorah is just to explain and reveal to us all of the secrets that are hidden in the Torah Shebichsav. So this is real stuff. And this is how the Klal Yisrael today sits in Bote Medrash like this all over the world and still studies the same Torah, read this morning from the same Sefer Torah, and studies every day the same Torah that was passed down from Sinai to this very day. And therefore, what we believe, if you will, about Hashem and creation and Yitzias Mitzrayim and Maimon Har Sinai and all of these things, these are not beliefs that we choose to believe. These do not require leaps of faith as in many religions where they say this person had a vision, this person had an appearance, this person had a dream, and people either believe it or not. But eyewitness testimony, and nobody in all of history, as much as they copied from our traditions, and they did, never dared to copy this message. Nobody ever made the claim, no one in all of history, that there was public miracles and public revelation from Hashem, except to the Jewish people at Har Sinai. And the religions that do speak about it, there was a guy in my office a couple weeks ago, maybe a few months ago, and I started to hint to the fact, just mention that it's interesting that the Jewish claim is so different from all the other claims. I didn't talk to him about reality, just claim. We claim there was public revelation. We claim there were public miracles. Nobody else ever made such a claim. So he says, wait 1 minute. And he takes out his smartphone and he's looking here, you know, today you got to be very careful because they think they have all the information in the world over there. The accuracy level is about 0%. But no, that's a little exaggerated. But anyway, so he's looking, and he discovers, Baha'i, the Baha'i religion, makes such a claim. I was a little scared because who knows what he can come up with on the internet. He says, you're right. The Baha'i religion does make such a claim. They say it happened to the Jews at Sinai. And so does Christianity, and so does Islam, and so does Sikhism. So yes. There are five religions that claim there was a public revelation and public miracles, but they all agree that it happened to the Jews and not to them. Why didn't they say it happened to them? Terence is very simple, Rabbi. You say you can't get away with such a story unless it actually happened. There's too many people involved. You know, there's too much knowledge, there's too much demand, there's too much mesiras nefesh, there's too much accuracy, there's too much exactness, there's too much action, activities, and a lifestyle throughout history. Just can't. You can't fabricate it. So anyway, that's the story. So we have to know that we're not talking about leap of faith. We're talking about the ultimate reality. And it's on that Creator who did that great chesed and showed that great love of Klal Yisrael, of taking us out of Mitzrayim and performing such miracles and giving us the Torah at Har Sinai and allowing the survival of the, assuring the survival of the Torah and of Klal Yisrael in the worst adverse conditions in all of human history to this very day. That's the one we put our trust in. And that's the basis for our bitochen. Okay, so that's point number one. And without that, what we call emunah, Must be anyone who believes must have anyone who's kol habotech ma'amin. Anyone who believe, anyone who has bitochon must have this emuna, which we say is this knowledge, historic knowledge. But lav kol hamamin boiteach. Not every mamin who knows all of this is able to put his trust in Hashem. And for that, the Rishonim explained, because his one question is, Hashem is all-powerful. Hashem is molei chesed v'rachamim. But how do I know I deserve it? So that's really the issue in Bitochon. Shemo goram hachet. Rashi brings it when it comes to Yaakov Avinu, when he says, "Kotoyiti mikol hachasodim," and vayiro vayesel, he's afraid of Esav coming, because maybe even though he had a haftocha, Shema goram hachet. So that's the issue that we have to deal with Bitochon. Okay, now let's try to deal with Bitochon from a number of different angles. The first angle that I would like to refer to is Shabbos. Shabbos is a, just very briefly, because I'm sure that I've mentioned this here before, but Shabbos is a very powerful Musa Seder in developing Bitochon in Hashem. Very, very powerful. Why? Very simple. Shabbos, we testify to the creation of the world in celebrating the anniversary of creation, which was Shabbos when the world was completed, to live in a state, the Sipurnu tells us, of total completedness on Shabbos. Shabbos, our world is complete. Rashi even says, Sheishes Yomim Tavod, Vasizikom Lachtecho. What does the Torah have to tell me, Vasizikom Lachtecho? When Shabbos comes, Sheyia Beinecho, Kilu Kol Malachtecho Asuyo. When you come to the Shabbos, it should appear to you that all your work is done. What do you mean, appear to me all my work is done? Yes, Shabbos has the power to allow us to feel as if everything's taken care of. There are no problems. The money's in the bank. It's all taken care of. It's all done. Why? Because number one, we're testifying to the fact there's a creator. Well, if there's a creator, it's already, I don't have to worry so much. Someone's in charge. Number two, the fact that only we celebrate the anniversary of creation. That says we are especially beloved to Hashem. So there is a creator. The creator told us to celebrate, invited us to celebrate this anniversary party with him, to the exclusion of everyone else who should have been invited because they too were created. You know, but no, you're my special people. Rashi says, when I've given you as a Yerusha my day of rest, my anniversary of creation, that should be for you a day of menucha. Now, I want to ask you a question. If the Creator has an all-powerful ruler of this world, has invited us as a great sign of His love to celebrate His anniversary of creation to the exclusion of everyone else who was created, it's a very exclusive invitation. It's a very clear sign of the unique relationship that we have. Do you really think that if we celebrate his anniversary, he's going to let us get messed up in business, in life, in problems? He'll take care of us. So when I close my business, when I close my store on Friday afternoon to celebrate or to respond to the invitation of the one who invited me to celebrate his anniversary of creation, it's very, very hard to imagine that he's going to let me suffer because I came to his anniversary celebration. And not the one who's in control of everything, not the one who created the whole world, not the one who loves me so much that he chose me to invite to the to the anniversary celebration to the exclusion of everyone else. So the fact that there's a creator, that he's active in creation, and the fact that he invited me to celebrate and express such a love, that already gives me a confidence. I don't have to worry. He's going to take care of my business. But Shabbos does something else on a psychological level too. Because you know something? There's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do about it. Your world is complete. You've done everything you're allowed to. Everything you need had to be done before. Whatever isn't done before cannot be done. Serious consequences as well. that already psychologically says, hey, what am I worried about? It's nothing I can do about anybody. Many people realize that if there's nothing, the minute they know there's nothing they can do about it, all of a sudden, they're much more calm. Because the nervousness is, what should I do? What am I going to do? There's nothing to do. It's done. And the combination of Creator, and the combination of special love, they invited us to celebrate the creation, and the combination of all the things that are forbidden to us to do, because we have to live in a state of completedness, emulating the state in which the Creator was when His world was created, on the seventh day, on the day of the anniversary of the completion of creation, that gives me a certain sense of, it's all done. I can see as if all my work is done because there's a Creator and He invited me to celebrate and He loves me so much and I can't do anything about it. Anyway, take the spiritual and the emotional and psychological, and it ends up with a matzav that, you know, and I'm sure that I think even recently I've told this story, but I can't resist because it's the most powerful story about this Polish landlord who came to visit this Jewish family on Friday night, and he sees that they're living in such poverty, but they seem to be so happy and enjoying the Shabbos meal in such a way they never saw such a thing. He was overwhelmed by the contrast. He says, what can I do for you? I'll give you one wish, anything you want. And all the poor Jew could say, the candle is bent over and it's dripping. Could you please be a nice Shabbos goy and straighten it out for me? He couldn't relate to the question of what are you lacking on Shabbos? Because my world is complete. Everything is done. There's nothing I can do about it anyway. There's a Creator who's covering. The Creator loves me. He only invited me to the anniversary celebration to the exclusion of anyone else. I suggest to you, Rabbi Yisai, that Shabbos can give us an inkling, an insight, a glimpse, a taste of what it means to have bitochen in Hashem. And that can carry over to the rest of the week. We say by Havdalah, we say psukim of bitochen, in a kel shuosi, Hashem HaYeshua, Hashem HaShem, Svokes Ashri, Odu B'teach Boch. Also to try to take from that Shabbos inspiration, from that Shabbos chizuk, from that Shabbos source of bitochen, and to carry it with us into the weekday, so that we can maintain that bitochen. So Shabbos is number one, a true lesson, or a true workshop, a true laboratory that can formulate and can strengthen bitochen in our lives. But unfortunately, life is so challenging, life is so difficult, and even though on Shabbos, let's say the money is in the bank, everything's taken care of, but when you make Havdalah, the money goes right out, you're back to where you were during the week, in a real sense, even though you're much more inspired and capable of bitochen. So, we have to work harder. Now, how do we work on developing bitochen? So, one of the most successful or most critical formula in developing any sense of feeling or emotion or conviction is to appreciate the benefits. If we don't appreciate benefits, we're not motivated to work on it. What's in it for me? If I can't appreciate benefits, then it's very, very difficult to put in work and hard work and serious work because, well, what's the point of it all? So I'd like to talk for a few moments about the next topic, which is the life-altering benefits of bitochen. And the life-altering benefits of bitochen, it truly can be life-altering. You know, nobody gets away without challenges. Nobody. And challenges create stress. Stress, they say, is the number one killer in all of society. You know, stress is so difficult, it's so painful, emotional stress. What am I going to do? And I have anxiety and I worry about it all the time. And it interferes with my sleep and it interferes with my, well, eating sometimes. We eat because of stress, but that's besides the point. But it's interfering with my whole life. What do I do? The greatest benefit of this bitochen is the total reduction of stress. Because you know something? Not only is the whole world in His hands and there's nothing I could do about it anyway, not only are my efforts just together hishtadlus, but not directly related to the result, They're only maybe because I shouldn't rely on miracles. They're only maybe because the Torah says, B'chol asher taseh. But they're not the things that bring about the results. Only Hashem brings results. And He's the only one who can. There's nothing I can do. I can't even lift my finger up straight unless machrizen all of milamalu, the Gemara says. So once I realize that, wow, this, what am I stressing about? What's there to worry about? He got it all in His hand. I have to tell you that, I think I told you already, but you know, in the context, you know, I believe in repetition when it's in the context because it helps. But I had some news of some setback on this massive project that we're undertaking over there. Didn't worry me a bit. Nothing to worry about. He got it in His hands. And you add to that another piece, which is really also very important. If He wants it, I don't have to do anything about it. It'll happen. And if He doesn't want it, there's nothing I can do about it anyway. So what are you spinning your wheels? No stress. No need for stress. No. Stress is irrational. Well, it's always irrational, but over here it's really irrational because it's not even up to you. There's nothing you can do about it.
But they're still stressing about what's going to happen.
What's that?
They're still stressing about what's going to happen.
Very good. The second step is, thank you, is that everything that happens is good. Hashem, kol ma de'ovid rachmona l'tavovid. Now, yes, sometimes it's not to our momentary preference. That's true. But we can know, at least intellectually, and sometimes emotionally, it's really for my good. And practically everyone who sits in this room can figure or remember or ask in the family and find out a story when the end was terribly, terribly distressful and the reality turned out to be the best thing that ever happened. People will tell you stories day and night about that. Because ultimately, Hashem does everything for the good. Sometimes it takes a long time to figure out what it is. Sometimes we can get it sooner. Sometimes it's a little more subtle. But so once I know that, so I know that He's in control of everything. I know that there's nothing I can do about it anyway. I know that everything He does is for the good. That's a tremendous stress reducer. But there's another piece to it. And this one is powerful. I know that to the degree that I put my hope in Hashem and refuse to give up hope, and I know that if I go beyond that and I just happen to feel something from within because I know I have such confidence in your chesed that I begin to rejoice in the Yeshua even before it happens. Oh, I can even now believe that even as the stress is going on, not only is it all from Him, not only is He in control, not only is it all for the good, but it's going to be good the way I see it as good. And if you think that concept is a little too bizarre, I refer you to the Maral. The Maral says pshat in the Maisa of Reb Nochem Ish Gamzu. Nochem Ish Gamzu came to the Caesar of Rome with this package of gold and silver jewels, and it turned out that the Goyim had switched it and it was dirt, and Nochem looked at that and said, Gam zu l'toivo. And the Maral says that his bitochen that he had, Taka made it l'toivo. This tragedy, what could be more tragic than the Jews of Eretz Yisrael bringing to the Kesar a box full of dirt and saying, this is our gift to you, Herr Kesar, so that you should not oppress the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. What could be more tragic? What could be worse? And Nochem said, Gam zu l'toivo. You think he's out of his mind. But you know what happened? Because of his bitochin, this Elio Anovi came up, said the Gemara says, and he said, maybe this is like the dirt of Avraham Avinu that turns into arrows. No, it wasn't. It was the dirt that the Goyim put from the hotel where he stood. But they came, maybe that's a good idea. They tried, they threw it, it became arrows, and the Jews were heroes, and the Gzeira was rescinded. Gamzu l'teva means HaKadosh Baruch Hu in schus of abitochin, when we put our trust in Him, when we refuse to give up hope, when we have that total confidence in Him that it's all good and we don't worry about anything, He now takes it and takes the blatantly, obviously evil and transposes it, transforms it into good. Okay, so there's definitely life-altering benefits in developing this midah of bitochen.
Rabbi, does Kama Amar David Tavavid mean that Hashem does everything for the good, or does it mean like the best possible thing? Like good but not the best? Or
well, no, I don't think it means... I don't think by Hashem it's good but not best. By Hashem, good is the best. That's what he deems is good. That's the ultimate good. That's the way I would see that.
Also, okay. The concept of hishtalos, right? Let's say that like you tell yourself that you're doing hishtalos, but that ends up making you like stressed. Does that mean you're doing too much hishtalos?
Could be. It could be. But hishtalos should make you stressed, because you see, you have to look at hishtalos. This is. I'm glad you mentioned that point. You have to look at hishtalos as the following. It's a mitzvah. You know, putting on tefillin is a mitzvah? Yes. But putting a mezuzah is a mitzvah? Yes. Tzitzis is a mitzvah? Yes. Matzah is a mitzvah? Yes. Sukkah is a mitzvah? Yes. Hishtalos is a mitzvah. In fact, the Ralbag learns, and other Rishonim too, it comes from the posik, b'chol asher ta'aseh. There's a posik that says you should be ta'aseh. Some say it comes from the klola of Odom Rishon, b'zeh asapecha toich alechem. Whatever it is, there's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, that's what you have to do. If you're on the highest level, you maybe don't even have to do it. But on certain levels, we have a mitzvah. But that's all. You don't worry about mitzvahs. You don't stress so much about mitzvahs, do you? It's only a mitzvah. It's not what brings the result. The result depends on the chesed Hashem. I'm relying on Hashem, and the more I rely on Him, the more I have results. So, there's nothing to worry about. Okay, let me just move on. One more thing. There's a killer over here, Rabbi Yisai, which can ruin it all for all of us. Okay? It's all over. Everything I said until now could be negated in one sentence. Yeah? I'll tell you like this. Bitochen can change anything. Can turn bad into good. Can grant you anything beyond what you deserve. There's no limitation to what the Baal Bitochen has. Nothing in the world limits it. If he trusts Hashem, Hashem will deliver no matter what. But you have to have 100% bitochen. If you're lacking a little drop, don't anyone leave the room until I finish the paragraph. Yeah, if you're lacking a little something, a 99.99999, but 100%, it's all over. So then this whole thing is academic. Why are we even talking about it? Because who in the world is going to come to that 100%? Maybe once in a, who knows what, you know, in a Yovel or in a blue moon. No, blue moons come more often. Well, who knows when such a thing is going to come? The Chofetz Chaim comes along in a letter in the Machne Yisroel, and where he writes to soldiers that are going into the army and giving them chizuk that they should have bitochen. And he writes as follows. At the end of the letter, he writes this. It's in Machne Yisroel. You could find it. If anyone really wants, I have a copy of it in my room over there, and I'll be happy to bring it. You can make copies. Kifi goydel habitochen, kach goydel hatzlocha. It's not all or nothing. To the degree that you have bitochen, that's the degree of hatzlocha you'll have. 10%, you'll have 10% hatzlocha. 20% bitochen, I don't know how you measure it, only Hashem knows how to measure it. But it's not all or nothing. Baruch Hashem. Because if it was, we'd all be out of here. It would be a waste of time, this whole discussion. Not a waste of time, you know, but who's going to get to the 100%? So it works, it helps, it can change, it has life-altering benefits. Let me see if there's something else that I would want to mention here. Okay, let me continue that. What?
By Moshe Rabbeinu, you said that if God doesn't want to do something, He's not going to do it, obviously. But we know by Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he really wanted to get into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem asked him to stop because he didn't want to let him in, and Moshe stopped. The fact is, we see there that Moshe was able to almost get something done without not though. The way Hashem wanted it.
You know something? I stand corrected. And I misspoke slightly. I'll explain in a moment. And I appreciate very, very much your comment. And I'd like to expound upon it, expand it a little bit. Not change it whatsoever, but just to explain it a little bit. Basically, there is no koyach in the world that can override Hashem. He has the ultimate koyach. He built into this world a schus, which really translates into a power that he will not overlook and always respond to. And that's the power of Bitochan. By Moshe Rabbeinu was his tefillah. When Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't be mispalled one more time, Hashem would have answered him. Because the koyach hatefillah and Orach Chaim HaKadosh says that Bitochan goes even beyond that. He says it on this parsha, where the Torah says, Hashem says to Moshe, Matitzak Eli. So he says, who should I cry out to, if not to you? So Orach Chaim says there was a kitrug, and for some reason, because of what they did in Mitzrayim, their tefillah wouldn't work. But going to the Yam Suf, Bitochan does work. Showing you Emunah Bitochan, that does work. So it's even more powerful than tefillah. But maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was involved with Bitochan too, whatever. But there is a koyach in the world. But that koyach also is only what? Trusting Hashem's chesed. So I'm not saying I have a koyach going against Hashem. It's the when I have that ultimate dveikus and connection and relationship and love and trust in Hashem, then Hashem responds to that. It's almost you're putting all your trust into me, I ain't going to let you down. So you're right about your point, but the bitochen is the one exception. Not really, but it's like it works. It gets beyond that. Because of the fact that you're putting such trust in the one who is in total control. Okay, let's move on to another piece of this discussion as well. The path from miracles to bitochen. How do we get this bitochen? How do we internalize it in our lives? It's nice to talk about it, it's nice to read about it, it's nice to think about it, it's nice to hear about it. But tachlis, I want it. If it can bring me such hatzloch, if it can bring me such menuchas hanefesh, if it can bring me such total benefits, then I certainly want it. I need it. I must have it. What can I do? So the Ramban tells us at the end of Parshas Boy that from the Nisim Gluyim of Mitzrayim, we learn to recognize the Nisim Nistorim that exist in everyone's existence. And one of the ways to get to develop the Midas HaBitochen is to focus on the Nisim Nistorim. Look for the hidden miracles that take place in everybody's life. I have said here probably many times, and I'm very proud of it, of the time when this is many years ago, when we first came to LA, and one of my children was going on a trip in the summer, a day camp, and she asked for 75 cents the night before to buy a soda. I didn't have 75 cents, but I'm still not ashamed of it. Was for a good cause. Anyway, so not for the soda, I mean, why I didn't have the 75 cents was a good cause. That's also a good cause, but anyway. So what should I do? I said, say Tillim. Oh, come on. She sits down to say Tillim, a 7-8-year-old girl. Actually, she just married off her son last night. And she's sitting down with her sister. And a younger sister, a few years younger, and they're saying Tillim, and they say, I don't understand, I need the money now, I'm leaving early in the morning, what's this going to do? And little kid says, maybe, who knows, someone will think they have to give you, because she goes, and she goes to camp without the money, she comes back, a girl who borrowed money, 75 cents, in the Purim carnival, woke up that morning and says she forgot to pay her, and she paid her. Hashem is involved in our lives. Open your eyes, you'll see it in every aspect of your existence. It's there day and night, night and day. All it requires is for us to open our eyes and see it. Everybody has such incidents, whether they see it or not. And if they look for it, they will find it. If they'll talk to their family, they'll find it. If they'll talk to Holocaust survivors, they'll find it. If they talk to anyone who's been through almost days in this world, let alone years in this world, will tell them stories that are mind-boggling. And of course you could say, oh, it's just coincidence. Oh, it just happened. Oh, it was so lucky. Oh, it was such a natural chain of events. Oh, this, oh, you can say whatever you want, but after everything is said and done, we see miracles, little miracles, hidden miracles. And those are the basis for which we say, hey, Hashem's evolved in our lives. He's involved in every little detail. He really cares. He loves us. He's capable of doing anything. Look at that. I mean, that's not such a capability. But 6 months later, he wakes up this girl in the morning, puts a thought in her mind that she hadn't thought of for 6 months or 5 months, that she owes this girl money and she's going to bring it. How much? Exactly the same amount that she couldn't get from her pauper father. You know, never. The guy couldn't even make 75 cents, you know. So this is, and see it. It happens all the time, all the time. All the time. It's always, it's there with parnasa. It's there with health. It's there with jobs. It's there with raising children. It's there with accidents. It's there with everything. Everybody has a story. And through these, we begin to see Hashem is involved in my life in the intricate details. Hashem is all powerful because he makes the strangest things happen. And he must love me and do chesed to me. And therefore, he's the one that I can put my trust in. Collect all of these stories together and put them in a book. Collect all of these stories together and put them in a volume. Collect all of these stories together and put them in endless volumes. Anyone has the koyach to read that? How could you not trust him? Look what he does. Look at the level of involvement that he has in this world. And that's one of the key methods that a person can come to recognize that Hashem's chesed, and that it is worthwhile to put our trust in him, because he is so involved in chesed in every minute detail. Now, it's also very important to realize that when we look at Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have to look at Yetzias Mitzrayim not as Klal Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim with Nisim. Every individual Jew left Mitzrayim with Nisim. If the Jew stood in a room and it was broad daylight, and the Mitzri stood in the same room and it was frozen in a pillar of darkness, Hashem's Hashkoch is not just on the nation, it's not just on the group, it's on the individual, every individual. Every individual. He drank from the cup, he's drinking water, he's drinking blood, the same cup. Wanna try it? Anyway, so we see that, you know, Hashem's involved in every aspect of my life too. That can allow me. Then of course, he's involved, he cares, pays attention to detail, he's all powerful. Well, I may not be worthy. You know something, I may not be worthy, but let me tell you a secret. He gives chesed to the not worthy people. We learn from a pasuk, Rabbi Machoivim L'Rosha, Vabitech Bashem Chesed Yisoyvevenu. Great are the tzoras, the pains that a Rosha feels, but one who puts his trust in Hashem will be surrounded by chesed. So, hey, even if I'm not worthy, Hashem does chesed to those who put their trust in him, and to the degree that I can trust him, it's to that degree that he will do the chesed for me. Therefore, this is something that I really want to inspire in myself and assure that I develop. Okay. The next topic, I want to try to run through these. I don't know how much more time we have. We'll see what we can do. Let's develop bitochen together. Okay? Let's do a little exercise. What can we do to develop bitochen?
Start with little
things. Tastes like water to me. Anyway. So one thing is like this. The first thing you could do to develop bitochen is not fool yourself. It's very easy to fool ourselves. I found the bitochen button. I pressed the button, and now I'm a baal bitochen. Yes, I have bitochen. Chazon Ish has a beautiful mashal. Chazon Ish writes about a person who has a business, and he's very successful, and he's constantly trusting Hashem. Yes, I know you make me successful. You're going to make me more successful. I have total trust in you. Everything is about you. I thank you. It's all from you. Everything. Oh, no, 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 perfect. Mamashis, not Shaykh, such a Baal Bitochen. All of a sudden, he hears that a competitor is moving in across the street. Finished. He's finished. What's going to be? Pulls his hair out of his head. What's going to be with my business? This guy's going to destroy my business, my life, lose my life. I have to support my family. I have to... What happened to you, man? You were such a Baal Bitochen. How did you lose it? What happened? The Terence is, the Chazon Ish says, He was singing the song of Bitochen, but it wasn't real. He was talking the talk, but he wasn't really walking the walk. And we have to be very careful. It's very easy. Oh, I got Bitochen. Everything is fine. I got Bitochen. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, of course, is the best way to, the best example of monitoring this is the guy that he told to have Bitochen to win a lottery ticket, and the guy comes to me after a while, I have Bitochen, it doesn't work. He says, you still have Bitochen, 100%? Yeah, will you sell me the ticket for half price? Yeah. You see, you don't have Bitochen. Person who's sure he's going to win is never going to compromise and sell it for half price. So we can't fool ourselves. It has to be real. But one thing, Rabbi Isaac, that could be more real, and it also has a schus to achieve for us, and that's what we call kivui. There's four languages in Tanakh of kivui. There's kivui, chipui, chikui, kivui, chipui, tzipia, and
yichul.
And what?
Yichul.
That's right. Yachel Yisrael Hashem. There's four. I never get all four right. I get sometimes three out of four. Never all four. Anyway, so these four languages represent hope. I don't know for sure what's going to happen, but I sure am never going to give up hope. You'll never catch me being Miyayish. Despair is not a Jewish word. I have a book in my house that has that title. Despair is not a Jewish word. No, don't be Miyayish. Never be Miyayish. It's not for us to be Miyayish. So that in itself is an entitlement, and that can lead me even to a greater level of confidence. But that much is within reach. That much was within. I don't give up. What do you mean? Afilu cherev chodom urachal zavor sheodom al yimna esatz min arachamim. A sword can be on the back of his neck. He should not give up on rachamim. Hashem, the last minute. Yeshua Hashem keherif ayin. And very often, Rabbi Isai, Hashem wants the Yeshua to come keherif ayin in the blink of an eye. But I'll tell you a little story about eyes blinking. Yeah? Once put up a little piece of paper, a little one of those post-its on the bookkeeper. She wasn't a religious lady, but a very nice lady. A little post-it said here, Yeshua Hashem keherif ayin. The salvation of Hashem comes like the blink of an eye, in the blink of an eye. So after a couple of months, she was the bookkeeper in the yeshiva. After a couple of months, she says to me, I get it, I see it, it's real. But she says, why does he always blink the last minute? The money always comes in the day of the payroll, not the day before the payroll, the day of the payroll. Why? Always the last minute. So I said to her, I'll tell you the truth. Imagine he would blink 5 days before. You wouldn't know he's blinking. You'd say, oh, we have rich balabata. We have good parents. We have good fundraisers. We have a lot of money. We this, we that. When you ain't got nothing, and the last minute, you see that blink, Yeshua Hashem Kerefayin, then you know he's blinking. He wants us to know he's blinking. If we don't know he's blinking, we won't come close to him next time. If we miss the blink, then we missed an opportunity to connect with Hashem. So he blinks the last minute. Sometimes the test is to keep up that hope. Never give up hope. People are always so quick, you know. They say, oh, we have to take care of it immediately. All of the efficiency experts said, only hold a piece of paper in your hand once. And the minute you pick it up, deal with it and do with it. But wiser people said, Mashlo yasa seichel yasa zman. What seichel doesn't do, sometimes time can do. And leave it up to Hashem. Don't push it. The last minute he can deliver. I'm panicking. What are you panicking about? It's not the last second. Even my last second shouldn't panic, but that's besides the point. But he wants dafka the last second. He wants it in the most dramatic way because we're so sleepy and so fashtop the kep, excuse me, my French, and so unfocused that unless he makes it the last minute, we won't notice it. At the last minute already, we notice it. That's why it has to blink the last minute. So it's very important. If we want to develop it, we have to be careful not to fool ourselves. And we have to at least work on something that is more within our control. And that is this kivui, this hoping, or at least refusing to give up. I want to suggest that one of the ways Rabbi Yisrael Salanter advocated that learning a sugya be'iyun in depth can have more effect on a person sometimes than limud ha'musar b'spilus. Says, kimat yoiser, I never understood what that meant. kimat more. So it's a sugya. People should learn the Chovei Salavovas Shar Bitochen. People should learn Gemara. This book is an amazing book. This Igeres Al Bitochen. He brings Mar Makoimus, which are not Shayach, Rishonim, Achronim, which just the stuff that he brings there is mamish. Like sometimes he doesn't bring the whole thing. He you know, v'chule, he leaves out pieces, so it's kedai to go and check the original source. But study it. Study it as you would study a Tosfos. It's real. It's a sugi and shas. It's a sugi and shas. It's not just a sugi and shas. Iker nesinas hatera liyisroel hu kedesh yasimu b'tchoinam b'ashem. That's the words of the Vilna Goyin and Mishle. This is the sugya. It's the paramount sugya. It's the ultimate sugya. It's the sugya that will open up all the other sugyas, because once I have that connection with Hashem, what do I want? I want to know His Torah. I want to know more. I want to know more. I want to get closer to Him. I want to know everything about Him. I want to understand all of His ways because I have this close relationship with Him. And Reb Meir Simcha in the Meshech Chochma says that the mitzvah of having bitochen stems from the posuk of Uboy Sidbok, of clinging, vidavaktaboy, clinging to Hashem. That's the bitochen, is that ultimate relationship with Hashem. So, very important to learn it as in the original sources, as if it was a sugya in learning. Of course, we mentioned focus on Hashem's chesed, and on the intimate details of our lives, and forget about nature. I mentioned before that people use such foolish words to describe Hashem. Nature, fate, luck, accident, what else did I say? What?
Coincidence.
Who? Coincidence. I don't know, things like that. No, it's only the one and only Hashem, in the inimitable words of somebody, right? It must have been a miracle, that's right. From the one and only Hashem. That's all it is. Everything is a miracle. And we have to see that. And the more we let the teva of life fool us, oh, you know, I tell the story of, and sometimes little children are great teachers. Little kid was actually one of my children who was asked to leave the classroom. Very unusual in my family. Anyway, and standing outside of the classroom, And his mother passes by, and she's, what happened, and this, and he tells her. So she goes into the teacher, and she speaks to the teacher, and the teacher lets him back in the classroom. When he comes home, she says, "Wow, it's a good thing that I just happened to come by." Happened, that's another word, yeah. "It's a good thing I just happened to come by when you were standing outside, and I got you into the class." And this five-year-old kid looks at his mother as if she doesn't know what she's talking about, and says, "You happened to come by? Hashem made it that way." That's the way we have to view life. Everything is Hashem. It's from the one and only Hashem. There are no accidents. There are no happenings. There are no circumstances. There is no nature. The Navardika had it right. Nishto kein teva. There's no such thing as teva. It's all Ashgoches Hashem. He sometimes hides in the teva. He covers himself in the teva. He covers himself in hidden ways in order not to overwhelm us. And agav, that's a pretty big chesed too. Because imagine that we saw such blatant miracles and we still behave the way we do. We'd really be in trouble. So Baruch Hashem, he makes it a little easy for us. You know, we got, hey, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't notice that one. All right, you should have, but at least it's not blatant, you know, so. Anyway, so this is part of why we have to constantly look and think and realize, and not just Baruch Hashem, Bez Hashem, and not even think what it means. It's just like we say, "Hey, how you doing today?" And nobody could care less how you're doing today. You know what I mean? No, make it real. Baruch Hashem. Oh, Bezrat Hashem. It's going to be, yes. In fact, every time I say Bezrat Hashem, I have a big kasha. He doesn't help. He does it all. I still don't know the answer to that question exactly, but anyway. But what? Hashem helps? I mean, I'm doing and He's helping. No, He does it all. He takes care of everything. I'm just going through the motions. But I guess He calls it that. He allows it to be called that we're doing. He gives us credit for it and He's helping us. Something like that. Whatever it is. But be careful. Use, get involved. Keep focused on Him all the time. Everything, no matter what you're doing. There's another thing. Hashem doesn't want our thanks. Doesn't need our thanks. Doesn't get insulted. Doesn't have an ego. Isn't insecure. Oh, I'm not appreciated. Oh, they don't love me. Oh, they don't care about me. No, that's human prisus. But one thing, we should thank him in terms of praising him for what he does. Why? Only one reason. So that we should appreciate it. When we thank Hashem and say, well, Rabbeinu Shalom, I appreciate so much what you did, then we realize that it's the Rabbeinu Shalom who did it. If I don't express that thanks and appreciation, then I could easily fool myself to think I did it. And that would be a tragic error. Okay, let's move on a little bit. We'll try to finish up here very quickly. Okay, I think I'm going to just short circuit this a little bit and talk about bitochon in health, and then bitochon in parnosa, and then we'll be finished in a few moments. Health. We're plagued today in society by a lot of illness. There's physical illness, there's mental illness, and serious issues. And the bitochon that we have can make all the difference in the healing process of these illnesses. And even on a psychological and medical level, it's been determined that these emotions make a difference. When I lived in Los Angeles, I got to know this Norman Cousins. Norman Cousins was a best-selling author. I think he was the editor of the New Yorker magazine, a very prestigious magazine, very choshuva. He became the president's representative, president of the United States, representative to the Helsinki conference. He was like a well-known academic, a very, very highly intelligent man. So I got to know him, and he told me that he was sick with a debilitating illness for a whole year. The doctors really sort of gave up, I don't know. He healed himself by watching Abbott and Costello movies. He lay in bed the whole year just laughing. And he says, and he got back, when I knew him, he was perfectly well, just like that. He was laughing. I mean, he'd meet a person and say, tell me a joke. That's all he wanted to do was laugh. Later on, he went on to do research in the UCLA Med School and about how positive emotions enhance the immune system, that you can better fight off disease with positive emotions. Actually, I found in one of the Mefarshim in the Medrash, where the Medrash says, Vayisa Yaakov Esradlo Ve'el Chartzo B'nei Kedem, that Yaakov lifted up his feet and he went to the east, and Rashi seems to be bothered. Why does the Torah have to tell me he lifted up his east feet? The Torah doesn't tell me extra things. Vayisa, could have been he schlepped his feet. He says, no. Me'achar she'huftach b'shmira, once he was promised protection from Esav, his heart lifted up his feet and it became physically easier to go. The confidence that he had transformed his physical abilities. He now was capable of going faster, of running. He was lighter. I wish it was a formula for losing weight. And it became easy to go. So, and the Medrash on that says, Ki besimchas halev, Tluyim chayi haguf. With the happiness of the heart is dependent the life of the body. So the body in general responds to the happiness. The body certainly responds to the bitochon. Because the bitochon is not just the physical and psychological happiness that it brings, but it's the schus al piteiro. The Rabbeinu Shalom looks at the Baal bitochon and says, I have to help him. I must help him. And that koyach habitochon is tremendous. I want to tell you two stories. Story number one is a Chassidish story. I don't know whether it happened or not. I can't take responsibility for all of it, but it's one of those stories that most of it, if it didn't happen, it certainly could have. Okay, the part of it, I don't know exactly what to make of. This person was very sick, and this Rebbe came and said he's not going to let this happen, and he's going to work on his bitochon, and this younger man is going to live. And he goes back to his place, and he's working on his mitochon and this, and he keeps sending his gaboyim to find out if the Yungoman is still alive. They lived in different cities. They didn't have telephones those days. And finally, they found that they said, is there anyone from that city? And yes, there was a woman. They asked the woman, how's this guy doing? With a very sad face. She says he died. 2 weeks ago was the Levaya. Okay, they went back to the Rebbe. They tell the Rebbe, Rebbe, he's dead. The Rebbe says, it can't be. The younger man is alive and well. Go back and find someone else from that town. They go back, they find someone else. Yeah, tremendous ness. He's alive and well. And there's a Rebbe. They go back and tell the Rebbe. The Rebbe says, I knew it. My mitochen didn't fool me. And then later they come back to him and he explains what happened. He says, I was fighting for his life. I was working on my mitochen. The Sultan, the Malach HaMavis, was trying to take his life away from me. He says, and if he would have shaken my bitochen for a minute, he would have had an itzochen. It's like a ballad that was all in rhyme, this story. That's where I heard it. But it was guys singing it, you know, like one of these ballads. But anyway, he says the younger man's life was hanging. He was trying, the Sultan, the Malach HaMavis, was trying to get me to weaken my bitochen. Then he would have had the right to use his what do you call it? He has a, what do you call it when you have a permission to kill? He has a, what? Who? That's the word I'm thinking. Anyway, whatever, the same thing. He has permission to say, and he couldn't do it, he says. The Sultan got so, the Malach HaMavis got so crazed at his inability to shake my bitochen that he got dressed up like a lady and he went to that inn. And the lady that told you the guy died was the Malach HaMavis. And he figured if he would convince me that the guy is dead, he would shake my bitochen and then he'll be able to kill him. His life was hanging by a thread at that moment. And I didn't let it happen. I maintained my bitochen. I refused to believe that this man had died. And sure enough, it happened. Now, I don't know about the Malach HaMavis dressing up like a lady and that Lucille Bashkever. I know these things, you know what I mean? I'm not familiar with all this stuff, you know, Akasha Famaisa. But what I do know is that the concept is very strong. That the bitochen, if the bitochen is strong and we refuse to give up. In fact, I have a theory that people who are sick, moments before they die, they give up. Very often you find, and doctors have corroborated this, they're fighting, and at the last minute when they're losing hope, they say, I don't want to live anymore anyway. They throw in the towel, and that's when they go. And when they're still, kol mishia chubra l'chayim yesh bitochen, when they're still, they keep it, I want to live. But then at some point they see it, nothing is happening and nothing is changing, it's getting worse, and they give up. We're never allowed to give up. And we can't, no matter how desperate, afilu cherev chodo munach al tzavar shalodem. But I want to say that the truth, it's true on the opposite side too. And that is as follows. I think with this we'll stop here and then we'll continue just a little bit another time. That the truth is as follows. And this is personal and painful, but I want to share it with you anyway. My wife was sick for about 6 months. And things were, you know, improving and whatever, getting treatment. And then on a Tuesday, 10 days before she passed away, the doctor told us that the treatments worked. And she's disease-free. She's going to be okay. And 10 days later, she passed away. And I can't say that I'm walking around guilt-ridden, because I don't think that's productive. But I feel very strongly that statement that the doctor made, we accepted it too readily. And it allowed us to weaken the bitochen. Just like a negative statement, it's all over, weakens the bitochen. A positive statement also could weaken the bitochen because, look, hey, everything's fine. Okay, take your eyes off the ball. You know, it's made. It's on. It's a home run. Not a home run until until it happens. And we have to be so careful. Whether they tell us it's impossible to be good, you're only a doctor. Mikan shenit reshufa, the reshus, the reife, the rapis. The reife is only given reshus to heal, not to say who could not be healed. And he's only given reshus the rapis, not even to say who could be healed. To predict the future, even momentarily, it's not for him. So many people, you hear stories that people that were brain dead and that they're alive and well and who knows what. I mean, it's all up to Hashem. And we gotta, even if we hear a psura toiva, kol shekein a psura roa, never take the eyes off the chesed Hashem, off the rachamim, focus on that bitochen. Because that's the most powerful weapon we have. That's the most powerful antidote we have. That's the most powerful medicine and treatment that we have. And whether the situation is desperate or the situation seems to be all better, that focus has to remain there, because otherwise, who knows, we give opportunity to the Malach HaMavos to do terrible things. So anyway, that's a couple of thoughts. I'd like to be able to continue to just do a couple more pieces of this, but I think the hour is late and we'll have to leave that for another time.